Yeats, the public man, knew that poets and those who spoke in defense of poetry were often subject to ridicule and even personal abuse. In a poem called "To a Friend Whose Work Has Come to Nothing," Yeats takes it upon himself to counsel a fellow writer who has been treated shabbily by a critic who is nothing more than an ass and a liar. What should a poet do in such a circumstance? Respond in kind? Continue to throw pearls before swine? Refute each lie, point by point, in an ongoing and wasteful outlay of concentration and energy? Or simply hold his ground in silence, contesting nothing, conceding nothing?
Now all the truth is out. Be secret. Take defeat from any brazen throat. For how can you compete, being honor bred with one who, were it proved he lies, were neither shamed in his own nor in his neighbor's eyes? Bred to a harder thing than triumph, turn away, and like a laughing string whereon mad fingers play amid a place of stone, be secret and exult, because of all things known, that is most difficult.
In the meanwhile, there were more personal commemorations to be made. When the only son of his friend, Lady Augusta Gregory, was killed in action on the Italian front in 1918, Yeats wrote two elegies. In the first and longer of these two, he asked in one memorable line the question asked by all survivors of those who die young: what made us dream that he would comb gray hair? But in the second and more famous poem, entitled "An Irish Airman Foresees His Death," he universalized the loss into a vision that becomes the perpetual epitaph for all those who die heroically without ever thinking of themselves as heroes at all.
I know that I shall meet my fate somewhere among the clouds above. Those that I fight, I do not hate. Those that I guard, I do not love. My country is Kiltartan cross. My countrymen, Kiltartans poor. No likely end could bring them loss or leave them happier than before. Nor law, nor duty bade me fight, nor public men, nor cheering crowds. A lonely impulse of delight drove me to this tumult in the clouds. I balanced all, brought all to mind. The years ahead seemed waste of breath, a waste of breath the years behind. In balance with this life, this death.
This is the universal Yeats. Later, he would write poems that have been called prophetic and their vision of life in our century. The most famous of these is called "The Second Coming." Yeats believed in a book called A Vision that human civilizations moved in 2,000-year cycles, because the end of each millennium, like the end of each century, like now, brings with it a sense of doom, of time running out, of the world coming somehow to a stop. Yeats's poem touched on the fears and the anticipations that this sense of doom brings with it. Since the Western calendar charts its beginnings from the birth of the Christ, Yeats makes the assumption that the end of the millennium will herald the prophesied second coming of Christ, as mentioned by John in the Apocalypse. The conditions anticipating the second coming are readily apparent, and they are described in the first part of the poem. The center gives way. Everything begins to disintegrate. Good men are silent. while evil men are aroused and triumphant, people begin to look for a savior. But the expected savior turns out to be man himself, man the predator, as imagined by the Egyptians, who sculpted man as a sphinx, a lion with a human head, the only beast who feeds on his own kind. For Yeats, the era of the destructive nature of man may be at hand, and Bethlehem is no longer a symbol of hope, but a prophecy of doom.
Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart, the center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood-dimmed tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Surely some revelation is at hand. Surely the second coming is at hand. The second coming. Hardly are those words out when a vast image out of Spiritus Mundi troubles my sight. Somewhere in the sands of the desert, a shape with lion body and the head of a man, a gaze blank and pitiless as the sun, is moving its slow thighs, while all about it reel shadows of the indignant desert birds. The darkness drops again. But now I know that 20 centuries of stony sleep were vexed to nightmare by a rocking cradle. And what rough beast, its hour come round at last, slouches toward Bethlehem to be born.
Yeats's hatred of anarchy and of everything that pulled things apart was genuine, and it was absolutely consistent with his belief in poetry's civilizing power. Anarchy could only be counterbalanced by its nemesis, civility. Where anarchy destroys, civility creates. While anarchy lays waste, civility makes possible the unfolding of those qualities that should become us as human beings. Yeats pleads for such civility in the adult life of one of his children in these verses from A Prayer for My Daughter.
May she be granted beauty, and yet not beauty to make a stranger's eye distraught, or hers before a looking glass. For such being made beautiful overmuch, consider beauty a sufficient end. Lose natural kindness, and may be the heart-revealing intimacy that chooses right and never find a friend. And may her bridegroom bring her to a house where all's accustomed, ceremonious, for arrogance and hatred are the wares peddled in the thoroughfares. How but in custom and in ceremony are innocence and beauty born? Ceremony's a name for the rich horn, and custom for the spreading laurel tree.